We are live from the Minnesota State Fair on what's turned out to be a gorgeous day. The crowds are great. Tom Schroyer is our regular host, but filling in for Tom today. John Rossman from Moss and Barnett. Great day to be at the fair, John.
Thanks, Steve. It's an honor to be here today.
And we have a very special guest attorney from Moss and Barnett. He really pulls double duty, an attorney by day and mayor of Eden Prairie by night. Phil Young, welcome to the program.
Steve, thank you very much, and pleased to be here.
Phil, I want to talk a little bit about your background first. I know you graduated from Notre Dame University and got your law degree at the University of Minnesota. And as Steve mentioned, in addition to being a shareholder at Moss and Barnett, you're also the mayor of Eden Prairie. It always interests me how people get involved in politics, and if you could briefly tell us how you ended up getting involved in politics.
John, I'm a glutton for punishment, is what it boils down to. But beyond that, no, it's really a factor of two things. You know, I'm something of a political junkie. I've always enjoyed watching politics, being involved in politics. And a couple of years back, you know, I was thinking to myself, you know, whether there was a way that I could, you know, give something back to my community. I mean, we here in Minnesota have a strong volunteer ethic. You know, a lot of people give time to the church, nonprofits. You know, some are just, you know, do a lot for youth athletics. And I thought that if I could contribute to local politics, that would be one way that I could not only give back to my city, but do something that I have an interest in.
Was this your first foray into politics?
Yes, Steve, it was. I mean, I've been mayor now for 2 years, but I did serve one term on the city council. So I've been in local politics now for a total of 6 years.
One of the things we talked about before the show is really the time commitment. Whether people are serving on their school boards or on their local city council, there really is a tremendous time commitment for all those people.
Steve, you're absolutely right. And that is one of the tricks of the job, because it could be, if I let it, a full-time commitment. Because there is no end to the number of issues which come up to the city. And one of the real challenges which I have is balancing not only my day job, because again, city government, at least in the suburban cities, is a part-time endeavor, but also the commitments I have to my family.
You know, Phil, one of the issues that a lot of people are concerned about these days is property taxes. And as we've seen both here in the state and across the country, property tax values are declining. And I want to know, with property values declining, does that also mean the property taxes will decline?
Well, John, this is everyone's favorite subject, I know, property taxes. I wish I could give you a bit of good news on that front, but the reality is that for most property owners, taxes will not go down because of the reduction in market prices. And to understand that, you really need to take a broader view and just understand how a city or a school board or a county determines how much tax they're going to assess your property for. Because there really are three factors which can influence that. You know, the first, and arguably the biggest, is the size of the budget which the local government passes. And when you're talking about property tax, you're largely talking about counties, school boards, and cities. So once they determine that number, then you have to figure out how that burden gets spread across the entire city. And there are a couple factors which determine that. You know, the first thing is your property classification, because different types of property pay different tax rates. And this is something which the state legislature dictates to cities. So for example, if you own a small commercial building, maybe it's valued at $500,000, you will pay more in property taxes than a residential homeowner who also has $500,000 residence. And that's just the way the Minnesota has been for as long as there has been property taxes. But once you know your classification, then you talk about the third issue, and that really determines what's your share of the property tax burden will be, and that is your market assessment. And that is something which I think most people understand. They get the notice from the county in late February of every year, which tells you how much tax you owe. But to get back to your question, the reason that declining values won't lower your taxes is because if everyone's value drops by the same amount, I mean, your local government still needs to collect the same amount of property taxes. So what you really have to look out for, though, is changes in relative value. Is your property either appreciating or depreciating more or quicker than other properties in town. That'll determine whether your property taxes will go up or down.
And there is a process for homeowners to challenge where their property is assessed, that they can go and there is a hearing of sorts. What about that process? I get my statement and say, oh, well, it's gone up again, and I set it aside and put it in a folder and forget about it. Maybe that's a mistake. Maybe people should attend these particular hearings and find out how the process works.
Steve, I'll tell you that my city, for example, every year we make adjustments to assessed values based upon information which homeowners bring to our attention. And there's a couple different things you can do. And I think the first thing that any homeowner should do if they're unhappy with their valuation is call the assessor. I mean, most assessors will talk to you, they'll schedule a meeting, they'll try to explain how they derived your assessment. If you're unhappy with that, Steve, you're absolutely right. I mean, every city has what's called a Board of Appeal and Equalization, and they hold hearings in April. And if you're unhappy with your assessed value, you have a right to appear before that board and present your case for why you think your taxes should be lowered.
Phil, does the tax assessor have the power to raise or lower the amount of the assessed value and thus the amount of the taxes, or is that something you actually have to go to a hearing to do?
John, you do not have to go to a hearing. The assessor has the authority to lower the assessed value if you've proven your case to him.
And the city is not the only body that's involved in the property tax. There's the county and the local school board.
There's going to be the school board, the county, the city, and then on most property tax statements, you'll also see a line which says other, and that's going to be watershed districts and things like that.
The dreaded other.
The dreaded other, yes.
Which usually isn't a big part of the tax burden, but it's still there.
That's absolutely right.
We are going to take a break. It is Minnesota Law, live from the State Fair today. Our guest host is John Rosman from Moss & Barnett. Our guest attorney is Phil Young. And the topic, pulling the levers at City Hall. Phil is the mayor of the city of Eden Prairie as well. We have a whole lot more coming up here on News Radio, 830 WCCO. Welcome back to the fair. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. A lovely day, a nice breeze blowing through the fairgrounds today. John Rossman is our host for Moss & Barnett today. And our guest attorney is Phil Young. He is from Moss & Barnett's litigation department. And the topic today, pulling the levers at City Hall. Phil is the mayor of the city of Eden Prairie, and we appreciate these gentlemen joining us here at the fair.
Thanks, Steve. We were talking a little bit before the break about property tax assessments. And Phil, I wanted to ask you, if you go to the property tax assessor regarding the value of your property, your home, and you're not able to convince the assessor of a lower value or a different value, what's the next step to appeal further up the line?
Well, John, basically you have two different avenues you can take. Every taxpayer, whether they be either a business owner or a residential property owner, has the right to go directly to tax court, which is in St. Paul, and it is exactly what it sounds like. It is a court process, a judicial process. It is not something which most residential property owners go to first because it's more complicated, it's more expensive. Highly recommend using a lawyer if you're going to appeal your valuation there. But it is where you're seeing most business owners. If you're a business owner and you don't like your assessment, it's more likely that you will appeal it through tax court. If you're a residential property owner, you know, the first level of appeal is with what we talked about a little bit before the break, the city's Board of Appeal and Equalization. And that is a body, usually about five people, which the city council appoints from residents in the city, most usually real estate agents, bankers, someone who has some level of familiarity with the current market. They hear their appeals in April, make their decision. If you remain unhappy with the outcome, you have another level of appeal. And you can go then to what the County Board of Appeal and Equalization, which will do the same thing. They meet a little later in the early summer. And then if you're a residential property owner and you're still unhappy, you always have the right to go to tax court.
What kind of information should a property owner bring with them or assemble before they go before one of these boards to assert a certain value for their property?
John, it's all about the comps. Again, you know, the assessed value of the property, which the city assessor comes up with, is deemed reliable. So if you want to get a different value, you need to bring evidence. You need to bring proof. I mean, check your local newspapers. Watch the real estate transactions which are reported there. You can go to your county websites, which now in most counties in the metro area have property tax information and sales information available on the website. But you're going to need some evidence if you want to convince either the assessor or the Board of Appeal and Equalization to lower your value.
What lesson can property owners take away from the recent decline in property values?
John, what I try to tell residents as often as I can is get involved with your local government. Because whether the economy is good or bad, you've got either a city or a school board or a county which is going to pass a budget, which is going to be a big number. And the more citizen involvement you have, the more likely it is that it's going to be a budget that the residents are happy with and which will be more closely aligned to the level of taxation that people want.
And, Phil, generally these meetings aren't very well attended. City council meetings, school board meetings, there can be controversial issues that will bring people up. But in general, being involved, you can have influence in this process by showing up at the meetings.
Steve, I can't tell you how many times in the 6 years that I've been on the city council, in a town of about 65,000 people, and you get a group of 20 or 30 people in the council chamber on a particular issue, and that's going to have an impact. I mean, it doesn't take a great number of people to make their point.
Are you surprised, though, by, in general, the lack of attendance at these meetings? You're involved. You're the mayor. You decided to get involved and run for office, and you were elected. But are you surprised, disappointed by the lack of turnout at the meetings?
You know, we do all that we can to try to encourage people to come. I mean, am
sure.
I disappointed in it? Sure I am. But we've done things, for example, we've tried to have remote city council meetings. We've gone around town. We've tried to do it in other areas to see if we could promote people's interest. You know, some people watch at home because most city councils are now on cable. But other people, you know, life is busy. And this is, you know, city government sometimes is an under-the-radar screen type of an issue.
Phil, let's switch gears for a minute and talk a little bit about business. Everyone knows that the economy has slowed down this year. And I'm wondering, what can local government do to stimulate the economy?
Well, John, local government certainly does have some tools that it can use. Keep in mind that one of the primary emphases of local government is land use. So many of the tools which we have are directly related to land use as well. And if you're a business owner, and a lot of the discussions we have with them, which are about economic development, involve things like tax increment financing, sometimes tax abatements, and on the rare occasion, we'll also offer industrial revenue bonds in order to encourage development in our city.
Is there a concern that those types of programs, those types of initiatives, get cities working against each other? That, say, for instance, Eden Prairie is competing for business development against another government entity. Is there ever a concern in that area?
Steve, that's always an issue, whether
sure.
you're talking about business incentives or not. I mean, our interest, and here at Eden Prairie, we try to encourage businesses to come to town, even if they're from a neighboring city, and other cities do the same. I mean, the bigger issue with any of these business incentives usually involves other existing businesses in the city. They want the deal that somebody else got. And you have some cities which really have overused some of these incentives. And so nowadays, it's much harder to get them than it was even 5 years ago. I mean, the state legislature has made that harder.
And, John, you brought up land use, and we'll talk more about land use coming up following a break. We have the news and weather on the way here on News Radio, 830 WCCO at 1230, and we have a whole lot more from the fair. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Our guest host is John Rossman, sitting in for Tom Schroer, who's delivering his son to college in Colorado this weekend. And I'm sure we'll hear more about that next week from the fair on Minnesota Law. Our guest attorney is Phil Young from Moss and Barnett's Litigation Department, and he is the mayor of the city of Eden Prairie once again. More on land use coming up following the news and weather here on 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law live from the State Fair, presented each and every week at noon by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Our phone number on the program, as always, 651-989-9226. or 1-866-989-9226. John Rossman is our host this week, our special guest from Moss and Barnett's Litigation Department, Phil Young. He's also the mayor of the city of Eden Prairie, and before the break we were talking about land use, and that's always a hot topic.
You know, one thing we were talking about with respect to land use is the concept of one city encouraging a business to move to another city. And there was a substantial example of that, Phil, here in the state of Minnesota. In fact, in the Twin Cities real recently with Best Buy. Could you talk a little bit about how that transaction occurred?
John, I'd be happy to. We all know the corporate story of Best Buy. I mean, phenomenal Minnesota company, phenomenal growth, and for many years, a proud business resident of the city of Eden Prairie. But back towards the end of the last decade, they simply outgrew the space that they had in Eden Prairie. So they were looking for a new spot to build a new headquarters, and the city of Richfield enticed them away with a combination of two things. One, eminent domain. I mean, they took some property from an existing business in Richfield and made that available to Best Buy. And they also offered a tax increment financing package by which they reduced some of the increased taxes which Best Buy would otherwise have to pay in order to induce them to move.
As far as the concept of eminent domain and the city or a government taking property, that's always interested me. As far as the Constitution, United States Constitution is concerned, how does that square, the concept of the government taking property with the concept that under the Constitution we as citizens have the right to own property?
Well, John, it really is something of a balance. I mean, there's no question about it that we are a society which values private property rights. But we also are in a society which recognizes that there are occasions in which it's appropriate for government to take private property and put it to public use. The real question then becomes, what exactly is a public use? And when we're talking about things like roads or schools, or parks, there really is no controversy. I mean, people understand that government needs to provide those things. Where it has been controversial, and where it was controversial, for example, in the instance of Best Buy, is where you have a local government engaged in essentially what is a beauty contest. I mean, they have an existing business in town, and they want to remove the existing business owner by the power of eminent domain and do some economic development and offer that land to a different private property owner.
Is that a mutual situation where one business will be bumped out in favor of another business?
John, yes, it is. I mean, gladly, it is a very unusual situation. It doesn't happen a whole lot. And recently, I mean, Best Buy, it couldn't happen today what happened 7 years ago, because there has been kind of a movement afoot across the country, certainly in Minnesota, against the whole concept of using eminent domain in order to further economic development. And there was a case which went up to the U.S. Supreme Court about 3 or 4 years ago, which actually affirmed what a Connecticut town had done. But the result of that was that citizens across the country were outraged. And here in Minnesota, we had a grassroots appeal. It came up overnight. It was a bipartisan effort to try to change that so that can't happen in Minnesota. The law was changed. So today, if you're a city, if you're a county, and you want to try to use eminent domain in order to further economic development, you can only do it in very, very limited circumstances. You have to essentially be dealing with either contaminated property or a property which is so blighted that there's no controversy that you need, that the government needs to get involved and needs to use that great power of eminent domain in order to make something better happen.
So in other words, what happened in Richfield probably couldn't happen at this point or going forward.
Steve, in Minnesota, that's absolutely right. That can't happen.
That there was a car dealership there, Wally McCarthy, and they wanted to build Best Buy's world headquarters there, and they ended up doing that. But in the future, Wally McCarthy would be able to stay.
Steve, that's absolutely right. I mean,
there
was a lot of outrage about that, and they fought it. They went all the way to the Minnesota Supreme Court. But
sure.
Then because of this Connecticut case, the Minnesota law changed.
And the Connecticut case, wasn't that involved in residential, where you had single-family dwellings and a developer wanted to come in and build this new condo development, for instance? I guess I don't remember all the specifics, but it had to do with residential homeowners, and a developer wanted to come in and remake the neighborhood, so to speak.
Steve, that's absolutely right. I mean, you're talking about homeowners, residential homeowners, who had lived in their property for decades, mostly small, modest-sized houses. And then you had a city, which is trying to do what a lot of cities sometimes do try to do, and that is to revitalize a stagnant local economy. And they wanted to do it by bringing jobs, bringing in large commercial buildings. So they took the residential homes, tore them down, and offered them to that developer.
Phil, one of the tools that you mentioned that was used with the situation with Best Buy is tax increment financing. Could you explain what that is?
I will. Tax increment financing is one of the tools which local government has to encourage redevelopment. And so it's not something which a city can do with raw land. It has to be a piece of land that already has a structure on it. And the best way to explain how it works might be to give an example. I mean, say you're in an industrial part of town, you got an old warehouse. I mean, even that warehouse, as underutilized as it may be, has some value. It's assessed at a certain level and is paying some level of tax. A developer might come into town and they say, well, we can tear down that warehouse. We can make something which is worth 20 times as much and which will increase the tax income to the city. And the discussion goes on, and they talk about making use of what we call the increment. In other words, the old warehouse might generate $20,000 a year in taxation. The new commercial structure might generate $200,000. What the city will do under tax increment financing is take that difference and apply it to some of the site costs or some of the cost of building streets or bringing sewer and water to that property. So it is an incentive, and it's over temporary for a certain number of years, that income stream, that tax stream, will be dedicated to the cost attendant to that redevelopment.
Want to go to the phones? By the way, our phone number on the program, Minnesota Law, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We go to Bob in Robbinsdale. Bob, you're on the air.
Yes. Section 15 of the Bill of Rights for the Constitution of the State of Minnesota states clearly that all lands within the state are allodial. And I would like to have the meaning of that explained, please.
What's that, sir?
All land within the state of Minnesota is allodial. And I would like to have that explained.
Yeah, we couldn't exactly hear what term you were using, but we can follow up a little bit more clearly that there have been recent decisions that more closely protect the rights of landowners, that people have more rights than ever when it comes to their own property.
Steve, that's right. I mean, in Minnesota and across the country, we have a strong interest in protecting private property rights. And as you said and as we talked about, I mean, those rights are more secure now than they were just in the recent past.
What about a city, and from your perspective as mayor of the city of Eden Prairie, how much power does the city have over what a person does on their property? For instance, a homeowner wants to store a gigantic motor home, and I think people are familiar with what I'm talking about, or boats or automobiles. In your experience, how much power does the city have to say to people, you know what, you can't store that on your property?
Well, Steve, under a city's zoning power, we do have the ability to address issues such as how many vehicles can be on the property, whether you have a shed, how close it can be to your neighbor's property, whether you do have an RV there. I mean, that is something which cities do address through their ordinances under their general police powers.
And are people grandfathered in? Can a neighbor complain and say, for instance, you know, I mean, there's a motorhome here the size of a tractor trailer, and they can petition the city council, and the city council could pass an ordinance that say, you know what, you can't store stuff that big on your property, or are there grandfather provisions, if you will?
I mean, Steve, there are occasions in which someone can be grandfathered in. I mean, usually that happens when you're talking about a structure. I mean, sometimes you might build a house. You might have built a house on the lake 40 years ago. It might be 20 feet from the shore.
Sure.
Can't do that anymore.
Right.
And as long as you're not tearing down that structure and making it bigger, you are grandfathered in. You are what's called a non-conforming use. But for something such as keeping an RV on there, that isn't a permanent addition to the to that property. So that there's no grandfathering in for that.
Phil, in your experience, does the city council or does the mayor get involved in situations like that where you have a dispute over a motorhome on a piece of private property?
John, almost every month there are issues which, as mayor, I wish I could duck. I mean, there is no shortage of what really amount to what I consider to be good neighbor type issues, which ultimately work their way up to the council, and people want the city council to try to fix it. And those can be the most frustrating to deal with, because we don't have a great ability to fix some of those problems, and no matter what we do, someone's going to be mad at us.
If you're a property owner who has that type of dispute or has that type of concern, what avenues of relief do you have?
Well, you always have the right to come to the city council. And for example, I'll tell you about an issue which we're dealing with a little bit in Union Prairie right now. It has to deal with fire pits. I mean, they're legal. They're legal in Henry County. You can have them as long as we're not in a drought. But some people who live next to people who have fire pits aren't happy about that the smoke carries over. And some residents have gotten together, and they are asking the city to do something about that. Now, we haven't yet. But it isn't an area in which a city could act if we so chose. But ideally, from my perspective, those types of issues really are good neighbor issues. I mean, I'd clearly like government not to get involved in those. I mean, those are issues which neighbors hopefully should be able to work out amongst themselves.
And tonight could be one of those nights, a cool night. Build a fire in the backyard. People want their windows open. The wind's blowing the right way. Smoke goes into the house. I could see how neighbors would get unhappy about it.
Well, Steve, I had a real hard time when the residents were telling us about this issue, because I enjoy fire pits very much.
Oh, sure.
And I love the smell, and I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, it really is. What about, and this I brought up before the show, and I think we should bring this up as well, in many, many new developments, there are covenants, what you can and can't do with the color of the home, whether you can have a fence or not, or sheds, or all sorts of these things. Does the city get involved in disputes like that?
You know, Steve, we really don't. I mean, most of those covenants are private arrangements made through the Homeowners Association, which run with the land, and that is a private contract that the city has no jurisdiction to deal with.
Do you still see that, though, at the council? Someone will come in and say it's not fair? Or is it just not an issue?
Steve, sometimes it does come up, but then we have to very politely tell them that simply isn't within our jurisdiction.
And in that case, hire an attorney.
That's exactly right.
All right. We're going to be back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. John Rossman is our host today. Tom Schroyer has a week off. Phil Young is our guest attorney today. The topic, pulling the levers at City Hall. If you have a question, by all means, give us a call, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. If you have a question here at the fair, we'll get you a microphone. It is News Radio 830 WCCO. Nice breeze blowing through the fairgrounds. We'll be here through the day. Mike Grimm will join me a little bit later on Sports Saturday. Eric Nelson has a weekend off. He's traveling in Montana, hopefully enjoying himself. Minnesota Law continues, presented by Moss and Barnett. John Rossman is our guest attorney. And Phil Young joining us. The topic, pulling the levers at City Hall. He is also the mayor of the city of Eden Prairie.
Thanks. I want to ask a little bit, Phil, I want to ask you a little bit about zoning and how a person can determine how their property is zoned. What's the methodology you go about to determine how your property is zoned?
Well, John, actually, it's pretty easy. If you go to City Hall, go to the planning department and ask to see what's called the comprehensive plan. And planning staff usually is very helpful, and they will present it to you and explain it to you. And what that is a master map of the city, which by color coding shows you the different land uses which exist within the city and how they're zoned and what the city anticipates for the long-term use of that property.
Is that something that's available only at City Hall, or is that something you could find on the Internet?
You know, John, a lot of cities do put that on the Internet. I think it's very handy to have. I know in Eden Prairie, we do have it on our website.
If a person wants to change the zoning of a piece of property, how would they go about doing that? For example, let's say I live in a residential area and I wanted to open up a coffee shop out of my house. How would I go about doing that?
Well, John, if you wanted to open up a coffee shop, you'd have to do two things. First, is you'd probably have to apply for a business license, because most cities do regulate home-based businesses. But if it was a permitted use, or if it was not a permitted use and you needed to change it, the process is pretty simple. Again, you would begin with the planning department staff. You'd file an application for a rezoning, which goes initially through staff. They would either recommend it or not recommend it. It then moves on to what's called the planning commission, which is a group of usually 7 to 9 residents from the city who hold public hearings and have the first look at any proposed zoning changes. The planning commission will make a further recommendation to the council. And at the end of the day, it is the city council which determines whether zoning will be changed.
I know there have been a lot of issues recently, and I've read about it in the paper, with regard to the change of zoning for golf courses. Folks who own golf courses want to turn those into developments for either multifamily or single-family homes. Can you speak a little bit to that issue?
I'd be happy to, John. I mean, you're right. If you look in the last couple of years, you've seen issues in Mendota Heights, you've seen them in Eagan, and you'll see other issues around the metro area in which people who've owned golf courses for some length of time wish to redevelop them into another use. I mean, right now, you're not seeing a lot of that type of activity because of what's happened to the residential real estate market. But I think that's going to, that'll change. I mean, as the economy turns, as the real estate market turns back around, I think, again, you'll see a lot of pressure on these golf courses.
If I live next door to a golf course or close to a golf course and I object to someone's, the owner of the golf course, seeking to rezone, it doesn't necessarily have to be a golf course. If I object to someone rezoning property that's close to me, what's the process that I can go about objecting to that?
Well, John, what usually happens is this. I mean, anytime that the city is asked to rezone a property, the city will give notice to the public of the request for the rezoning, and they'll do it a couple different ways. I mean, they'll print a publication in the local newspaper, which anyone can read, and what they usually also do is they will send a mail notice to certainly adjacent property owners, and usually property owners within a defined distance from the affected property, usually with about 1,500 feet. If you live within about 1,500 feet of a property which wants to be rezoned, you'll be given notice. You'll have an opportunity to go to the public hearings before the Planning Commission and the City Council and speak your piece.
Well, guys, the time has gone very quickly today. It's a beautiful day at the fair. We have the news and the weather coming up, and, of course, we'll be back next week. Tom Schroer will be our host. John, always good to see you.
Always good being here. Thank you very
much. Are you going to roam around and enjoy some of the fair here at the fair?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Outstanding. And, Phil, a pleasure to meet you.
I enjoyed it very much. Thanks, Steve.
Phil Young from the Litigation Department at Moss & Barnett. The topic, pulling the levers at City Hall. Phil, the mayor of the city of Eden Prairie as well. Thanks again to John Rossman. Tom Schroer will be back next week. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio, 830 WCCO.